that JJ is back in one chip from Harper. So we really appreciate that you are back with us, JJ. And the colleagues, by the way, we have said that we will be going through all the chapters in the department so that we have better information on what we are doing as a department and what new areas of breaking counts have we covered or we intend covering. In this instance, we will be concentrating on chemical and waste management. Just getting to know how we are also creating wealth out of waste, but also how do we ensure that there is no waste all over the place in our townships, in our towns. By the way, I was in some area yesterday called Port Elizabeth. I didn't like the waste that was everywhere there. I don't know whether it's waste or theft. I don't know how to differentiate between the two. But again, of course, we think that you also tell us how are we winning on legalizing all the land things that are illegal. And just getting to our people in ensuring that they can just create landfills everywhere and anywhere, and how do we deal with these matters that are so important to our lives. But we welcome all of you here to the DG, and we hope that by now you should know who's on this side of the table. We know that the minister will be joining us in due course. For those who might not know, we'll continue introducing ourselves so that we don't take it for granted that you know who we are. I'm Jackson Jenner, the chair of the Federal Committee on Environmental Affairs. We have a member there. Honourable member, you can introduce yourself.
My name is Kiri Sander, and I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
From the silence, Mark Kulani, a member of the committee.
I'm Hilda Fanny, and I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Helen Kitana, member of committee.
Good morning, my name is Mashile Obani, Land Services.
I don't know whether we still call you with the same name, but that's when I think before
she even introduces herself. You see, some of us, you can't just sit here with us. That's the bad part with me. But congratulations, I know she was married last week, and we wish her all the best. Those of us who have been there for some time, welcome to the club. Thank you, madam. You can introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, sir, and sorry that I'm late. Yes, my name is Joni, used to be CM Camp, but now Edwards, and I'm also a member of this portfolio. Good morning.
We have been saying swimming. Okay, we are most welcome, and indeed from all of us, we did convey your important steps to the committee. We did receive your apology as well. DG, we are here, we are now in your capable hands.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, Chair. And I'm happy to be back at home. The presentation today will be conducted, I think we'll have multiple. Mark will lead, but we have just circulated documents because I think it's also important for the committee to
understand the act you have to be motivated. Okay, we have National Environmental Management Act, as you know, as the umbrella law. Then we have the Waste Act, which then is the law that governs the management of waste in the country, which was amended, and you see when the presentation is undertaken. And then we have this document to chemicals. This is about our multilateral environmental agreement on the chemicals and how we manage those chemicals. And in the presentation, that aspect of the, I don't know whether you do Obed will then continue from Mark in that regard. So we have a whole team that can be functioned in the department led by Mark. But maybe I think just to introduce yourself, more you already in the comic knows you as
I'm Khawuta Mokoena from the Department of Chemicals and Waste Policy Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning, Chair. I think you're only Mark Gordon from the department as well.
Okay, and I'm not the phone number in case
from the department. Honorable members, my name is Beth Baloy. I'm the Chief Director responsible for Chemicals Management in the department.
Morning, I'm the Wosiliho from the department also.
Morning, I'm from Minas. I'm Mama Kapeka, Director of General Waste.
I'm not asking questions. The other colleagues know from the department already from the office of the CS. So we will take you through the presentation and we can then engage on the basis of the questions that we raised, but we do give a historical context and the background to waste management and where we are in our approach, and we also reflect on the challenges that we face. And I do want to remind honorable members that waste management, or at least pollution management, is a concurrent function between national, provincial, and municipalities. And this is where, both in terms of intergovernmental relations, there are some challenges in terms of making sure that there is a better execution. And I think we will reflect on those and some of the aspects of how we are, as a national department, assisting municipalities to undertake their functions. So, Mark, I hand over to you as the DG.
Maybe before you even talk, Mark. Remember when you came, August you were there before you went to, congratulations again for finishing the home race. Let's welcome you. When they came, they came to present on the international, amendment, and which of course we have welcomed, and we intend putting it to Parliament for ratification. But of course, we also need to speak with another portfolio committee there. We have already made the arrangements to them so that we are on the same page. But that doesn't mean that we're not, because as a committee we are going to approve it. We have approved it in terms of the committee. The only issue that we also raised, by the way, is how ready are you for implementation of those protocols as they come. But we also asked some, they might seem very stupid questions. They said there are other things that also get done. One of those things that we see in everywhere, in Johannesburg and everywhere else, closing. Now we know it's not your area, but we said when you come back, we'll ask you some questions. go and get answers if you don't have them. Clothing, you get all sorts of clothing that get dumped in poverty. And of course then people will sell that clothing at some minimal rents or whatever. But that was one area. But he also said, of course I know, one colleague of mine even said, you don't even know whether the jacket you are wearing, if you bought it from there, whether it's a jacket of somebody who has long passed or what, you don't even know. But the other area that we said, just get more information. Because we don't want to be a dumping place. Whilst we do have wonderful laws in relation to second-hand cars as a country, but the cars that then go to other countries in Southern Africa come to our shores before they proceed to other countries. We said, well, tell us whether there is application for this that we allow pollution of other countries through this act of allowing second even that hand cars to come through us because they come through Durban and you can only buy them from Durban if you are a not a South African businessman. Now you might have all those pieces of legislation and also politically whether it's the right thing to do for us to be distributing these hazardous cars to the rest of Africa. These are things that we said, when you come back, we will ask you these questions. Hopefully, you still have them in your heart and in your mind, Mark, and over. Maybe you can even start there before we even go to this important work that we are supposed to oversight you on. For our own information. How do all the old chair get into our country? Yeah.
Maybe that's what I would have suggested, because I think it's important to leave this on our approach to waste, because we have scrap metal, or we have e-waste computers that come to our country which can be used, but also they are towards their end of life, and how those would let them get damaged, because that is part of how we our legislation and our strategy anticipate the management of a different region. And the international agreements in themselves make provision for how things come into the country and move in the region. And basically, there is what we call informed consent and all of that. So in the presentation, we're going to be able to cover all of that. And basically, then we'll be able to answer questions. So thereafter, I would think it would be better to take the session.
Thank you. A few members who came in after we started. One of them is Bungane. Mm-hmm. Bungane is a member of the committee. Or maybe you can introduce yourself better, because some might not know who is Bungane.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm Thomas Adebe, member of the portfolio committee. I hope everyone heard what I said. Thank you.
The member, I think she has just gone to grab some tea. She is the honorable member, Malek. Also a member of this committee. We are now in your hands. I was just letting go so that you don't forget about them. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Rizzi. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. Chair, we will address this question specifically when we come to the multilateral agreements and also in the discussion on the general waste as well. So I think perhaps to start off and give us a background in terms of where we're coming from. I think we previously presented on the overall approach in terms of the branch's work and in the different areas of work. We then presented again on the waste economy some time ago, and last time on the 12th of May, I think it was specifically around the Basel Ban Amendment, and then there was a request for more information, I think, on basically how these are all intertwined together. So as DG mentioned, the mandate in waste is cost-cutting. We primarily are responsible for the policy and regulatory framework, some aspect of monitoring, compliance, and licensing. The issue of collections and disposal really rests with local government. There's some licensing aspects and monitoring and compliance that takes place at the provincial government level. At the national government level, we are setting the policy and the regulatory framework and having some of the licensing on hazardous waste mainly. So general waste is dealt with by the provinces, and we handle the licensing on hazardous waste. Just to take you to the history and evolution of waste management policy in South Africa, if we look at that diagram, that's how it started in 1996, just at the time of when we were formulating the new constitution for South Africa. There was what was known as the CONAP process, which was the consultation on the environmental policy process that started in 1996. Then under Minister Paula Jordan, if colleagues remember at the time, and then that culminated over a few years into what was then the National Environmental Management Act 1998. There was then a very precursor type of document on a waste approach and strategy. It was 1999. We then adopted and published the
You are most welcome, Minister. Thank you very much. Sorry for starting before you came. Next time it's gonna happen. we know about the flies and also the difficulty on the road as well. Yeah, the weather is not on our side today. Mark.
Thank you, Chief. Please proceed. So it was CONAP and then the 1998 culmination and with the National Environmental Management Act, known as NEMA, a waste management strategy, which is really an approach, and then a white paper that we called the Integrated Pollution and Waste Management Policy in 2000. Then there was a conference, the Polokwane Declaration, which was a consequence. It was a waste management conference that spoke about various issues governing waste, and I'll just touch on some of them just now. 2008 was the Waste Management Act, and since then we've been producing a whole lot of regulations, policies, guidelines, one of which was the national policy for the provision of basic refuse removal services to indigent households. Amongst that, we will also produce a tariff model, all kinds of guidelines governing waste management, even at the local government level, at the collections level, at the funding tariff level. And then in 2012, we produced a more holistic national waste management strategy, which honorable members have in the possession at the moment, which covers about 8 goals, which I'll touch on briefly in a moment. And then 2014, we went through you with the amendment to the Waste Management Act, which undertook basically reformed in 3 areas: regulatory reforms, economic reforms, and an institutional reform that culminated with the establishment of the Waste Management Bureau that I will also allude to and discuss in a moment. So 1999 was the first generation waste management strategy. It was a good initiative and basically set a platform and approach to waste management in South Africa. Before that, there was absolutely nothing. And 2000 was a white paper. And in 2001, the Polokwane Conference really prioritized waste management as a priority in South Africa. And we went forward then with adopting a national waste management strategy thereafter. Just to touch on the goals then, if we look at goal number one, that looks at promoting waste minimization, reuse, recycling, and recovery of waste. Goal two, to ensure the effective and efficient delivery of waste services. Next, grow the contribution of the waste sector to the green economy. Since then, we've evolved into a waste economy, a recycling economy. Now we call it the circular and resources economy, and it's evolving and evolving with technology and with best practice all over the world. So really the buzzwords in the sector at the moment is the circular economy. And we work with companies like Coca-Cola, for instance, where we stipulate minimum recycled content, for instance, in bottles like these. And so That's how we work in terms of closing the loop on what gets produced in terms of materials, and now there's a full closed loop life cycle in terms of materials recovery in products. Comfort speaks to ensuring that people are aware of the impact of waste on health, well-being, so it's education, capacity building, development, and so forth. Goal 5, to achieve an integrated waste management planning approach throughout government. So to make it seamless, and colleagues will know the, and talk about at a provincial, sorry, colleagues and honorable members, I apologize, honorable members, we talk about the integrated development planning approach in province and local government, the so-called IDP approach. And so it starts right there with ensuring that waste management is taken seriously and is put into the planning processes in all spheres of government. Goal 6, to ensure that sound budgeting and financial management is provided for waste services. So from treasury, there's a portion that's allocated to provinces and municipalities for management of waste through the equitable share and also through what is known as the municipal infrastructure grant scheme as well. Goal 7, to provide measures to remediate contaminated lands. In May last year, part 8 of the waste that came into force that looks at remediation orders and a more regulatory approach to remediation of contaminated land. South Africa, with our history of mining and chemicals, manufacturing and armaments and so forth, we do have pockets of land across the country that's contaminated, and we are approaching and we have an approach and plans to deal with that, and one of which is asbestos, which we'll be talking about later on as well. And then the last goal is to establish an effective compliance and enforcement mechanism with the Waste Act, which is dealt with another branch, but we work very closely in terms of the compliance mechanisms around that. Just moving on in terms of the background, I've covered that to some extent, and we produce various guidelines, regulations, and so forth that govern basic refuse removal, collections, and source disposal, and I mentioned the tariff, model tariff guidelines that we set as well. In 2015, we began to take 2014 with the Waste Amendment Act, we brought a new approach in terms of what we call a pricing mechanism, and there too we speak about a market failure rate. So essentially the question is, why do we have pollution in the world? Why do we have waste in the world? Why is something called waste? It's because of an economic failure. It's a market failure. It's a pricing failure. So waste is actually an economic problem, more than an environmental problem. So we have to correct that, to give an appropriate price to waste in order for it to be taken seriously, in order for it to be recycled, in order for it to in order for us to promote the recycling economy. So Minister of Environment Affairs a few weeks ago in a budget speech did announce and talk about the potential benefits, economic benefit of waste and the waste sector to South Africa, which accumulates over 50 billion per annum, and a lot of it sometimes is going to waste in terms of a lot of it being landfill. And we will share with you our approach to how we plan to curtail that with the waste diversion strategy, and at the heart of this is what is known as industry waste management plans. So the whole idea then is to look at how waste streams are managed properly, cohesively, and we have something like about 30 different waste streams. In last year's budget speech, Minister then prioritized three large waste streams, problematic waste streams, and large waste streams, which is the electronic waste stream, plastic packaging, paper waste stream, and the lighting waste stream, which is also carries dangerous and hazardous chemicals in those fluorescent lights that you see up here, and also in the compact fluorescent energy efficient lighting as well. So we'll talk a little bit more about the waste economy just now and the approach and how it is established through the pricing strategy and through the Waste Management Bureau shortly. Just to go back then, in terms of all the different policy instruments and tools that we've developed over the years, the waste tire regulations that governs the waste stream on tires, which is up and running at the moment through the RESA program, and we will give you and share with you some numbers in terms of achievements that we've achieved successfully in the last year and a half or so. Various norms and standards for waste collection, standards for waste disposal, the classification regulations that classify the toxicity of wastes and then determines what the disposal options would be for them. Waste information regulations are very important. These actually require companies, entities, municipalities to report waste production, waste disposal, and so forth, in order for us to get a baseline and understand the metrics around how much waste is produced in South Africa and what happens with it and so forth. Honourable members will remember the plastic bag regulations. It came with the plastic bag levy, and that's been up and running for many years now, I think since 2002, and with some challenges in the beginning, but that's up and running, and we constantly making fine-tuning those as we move along. It was then the solid waste tariff setting guidelines for local authorities that we also developed, a guideline that really looks at harmonizing a more appropriate model and a tariff for local government in terms of how they should manage collection of waste. We also produced the standards for organic waste, and on the chemical side, a whole lot of regulations for asbestos, polychlorinated biphenols, you know, as PCBs, a whole host of guidelines and so forth, which we'll talk to later. Polychlorinated biphenols, toxic chemicals, but the over is going to deal with that in more detail later on. Yeah, then in terms of the strategy on pricing I just spoke about and the mechanism around how we're going to manage and promote the waste economy and the recycling economy, at the heart of this is the national pricing strategy. This was done in consultation with the sector. We have a host of forums with industry, with NGOs and in government and through the provinces where information was discussed and discussion documents circulated, went through a major consultation process which culminated in the national pricing strategy which Minister published in February for 60 days, which we are now finalizing the comments. Basically what that does in the next slide is gives a mechanism of how waste can be priced, how revenue from that can be circulated within the fiscus, which is on the right-hand side, the diagram on the right, that gives more of the South African government approach to how we plan to manage this. So producers, an example I will use is electronic waste, the people that produce the products, like Dell, HP, Ericsson, Sony, they would, through SARS and the customs excise duty, pay a portion to SARS, that gets recycled, and use that word, through Treasury, then through the Department and the National Waste Management Bureau, and ultimately get dispersed to manage these waste streams more effectively to what is known as product responsibility organizations, which is an international benchmark and a model that is in all parts of the world. On the left-hand side, honorable members will be familiar with voluntary mechanisms like the collect-a-can process, the PECO people that recycle these bottles, the Rose Foundation that recycle waste oil. So they operate more on the left-hand side in terms of a voluntary scheme, which also has a bearing in terms of how we will then eventually try to manage them more effectively through the Waste Management Bureau. Moving on then in terms of the industry waste management plans, through those plans, particular waste streams, we envisage will be more better holistically managed, more effectively managed from the time they generated through collections, through transportation, to storage, and eventually processing. So the tire plan at the moment has given us a very good model in terms of the lessons learned from the Rediffa plan of how we're going to be adopting the final approaches to industry waste management plans. Obviously, then different sectors have different complexities around their waste streams and different methodologies, but in a sense, it governs three areas or four areas: generation, collection, transportation, and processing. With that, here comes a lot of awareness, capacity building that we will constantly and continually be doing with our communities, with the South African public and citizenship at large, because these things require constant awareness. So, for instance, on lighting, we started off with those incandescent bulbs, those very hot ones, yellow light type of thing, that's been banned as of February this year, they're not allowed to be on the shelves of any supermarket anywhere. So if you do see them, please report that to us. Then we went on to compact fluorescent lighting, which is these ones here that have mercury in them. And then what has come on screen now is LED, the light emitting diode. That is a most efficient one, but also comes at a price. So what's happening here is that as waste management is evolving, as technology is evolving, we have to resonate and move with that. So we have to, kind of constantly amend and adopt, technology transfers into South Africa, but at the same time, see how we can improve on our waste management as well. So the prioritization of the waste streams is managed through this and is dependent on several factors as we go through them. One is the severity of the potential impact. So, for instance, the way Minister then has prioritized these waste streams is really looking at the hazardous nature, the impact on health, and the severity of that. Then the available resources for regulation, how effective we will be in terms of implementing and controlling them. The level of maturity of the waste streams in the sector, how the sectors are organized to really deliver and implement. The cooperation we get from the different compliance aspects in terms of how we manage the sector, and lastly the measurements in terms of how we stipulate, for instance, recycling rates and so forth. So this year we will finalize those three industry waste management plans, which is the electronic waste plan, the paper and packaging plan, which includes plastic, and then the lighting industry waste management plan, which we feel were the three very important ones that we need to tackle right up. Moving on then, in terms of looking at Part 7 of the Waste Act and how we manage this concept of extended producer responsibility, we then get the sector, companies, municipalities, provinces, to look at the waste hierarchy, to adopt them also in their own policies, guidelines, bylaws, ordinances, and so forth, in terms of a sound waste management hierarchy. So it's reduce, recycle, reuse, recover. Then the empowerment of previously disadvantaged individuals. But through the waste streams and how we manage them, even at a recycling level, where we put in place things like buyback centers, materials recovery facilities, what is known as MRS. So through them, we should be empowering our communities, disadvantaged individuals, through the establishment of SMMEs, co-ops, recycling companies, where these people could be formalized in terms of a more formal economy. So, for instance, we have something like about 10,000 waste pickers at all our landfill sites. The conditions under which they work, the health hazards and hygiene hazards, is things that we have to start addressing, and we have been doing already, and it's to formalize them in terms of this approach. And then the last circle there that talks to information management, we can really manage what we can measure, and so there's a lot of work that's done on the measurement and understand the volumetrics around waste collection, waste disposal, and the management of waste holistically. At the job creation level, with the paper and packaging industry waste management plan, we're looking at about 1,000 job opportunities per month. In terms of the electronic waste plan, about 3,000 per month. With the lighting, about 100 per month, smaller waste stream. And then we would be managing and monitoring these on an annual basis.
Is it your phone?
I was wondering, looking for it, couldn't see it. Sorry about that, sir. Moving on with the question on how to support SMMEs and cooperatives, it's through these plans, and I explained in terms of revenue that's derived from these plans, and I'll explain a little bit more in terms of when I come to the functions of the Bureau, exactly how it should work. But just to give you some idea in terms of one of the plans that we've been dealing with for about a year now, we look at what's achieved in terms of the waste hire plan and those three categories of transporters, depot and depot managers and depot personnel, processors, micro-collectors. So for instance, if you look at the province like Gauteng, these are actual companies, SMMEs and co-ops. So if you look at transport, there are 22 companies, SMMEs and co-ops, that have been established just in the transportation side. Depots, depot managers, depot personnel, about 6 processing companies that will actually process waste ties, either through cutting, or grinding, pyrolysis and so forth. So forth, about 3 companies, micro collectors about 60. So in Gauteng alone, about 91 SMME co-op type companies established, and to date, about 181 throughout the country. Obviously, there's a different spread in terms of the provinces. Some are more industrialized than others, some are more ties than others, some have transportation issues because they are vastly dispersed. But those numbers are improving as more tires are being collected through that mechanism. So in terms of the number of cooperatives in that sector, it's really influenced by the quantities of waste tires available, the availability of treatment facilities, and we need to locate treatment facilities more in urban centers where we can reduce and sort the collections from the tire dealers and fitment centers through these facilities, and the rollout in terms of the amount of waste tires that will be collected. So moving on then to the establishment of the Waste Management Bureau, this has been quite a radical move, I would say, from the side of the department in terms of how we institutionalize a mechanism to manage a waste stream. And really looking at issues of regulation, but with the economics around waste as well. So for instance, I said and talked about correcting the market failure, pricing of waste. That then is managed through the Bureau in terms of how the funding will flow from Treasury to the Bureau, and how the Bureau then will monitor progress around the management of its waste streams. So if we go into very briefly the functions of the Bureau, and I don't want to just highlight a few. These are quite detailed in the act itself in terms of the objectives, functions of the Bureau. Essentially, it's to provide the specialist waste management services. So the idea is that there would be specialists that would be employed in the Bureau, people like process engineers, accountants, financial people, resource economists that really understand the economics around the waste services as well. It will deal with the collecting of waste revenue from the various waste streams. It will deal with the disbursement and incentives and funds that's derived from waste management charges and levies, and to identify and promote best practice in the minimization, reuse, recycling or recovery of waste. And of course to progressively build capacity of the Bureau to support municipalities in development and implementation of industry or what is known as integrated waste management plans. And very important, capacity building, empowerment, development at that level as well. So there's a focus on the Bureau also being able to provide support to municipalities. And in this context, we work very closely with COPTA, with Shelter, with MISA, in terms of how that level is better managed and becomes more empowered and capacitated to deliver on their mandate in terms of collection and disposal. It's governed then by a policy that governs the Waste Management Bureau, which we have already developed and analyzed, working very closely with Treasury and the Minister of Finance in his budget speech. The national budget speech this year then announced the first of a series of levies, and he announced a collections levy for tires, which we plan to implement early next year. In terms of the policy, there's a lot of data that we have provided to Treasury, and in terms of all the data around these waste streams, it is the mandate then of Treasury to really look at determining levies and tariffs for the different waste streams. But we work very closely with them and SARS in terms of how these are finalized as well. So moving on then to the issue of the licensing of landfill sites. Here again, I've indicated right at the beginning that our responsibility as a department is the licensing of hazardous waste landfill sites. General waste, this is done by the provinces and local governments and municipalities. However, we discovered that there were a number of landfill sites that were unlicensed. Some of them were illegal, and the history of waste disposal in South Africa was that even before all the legislation, if a municipality found a hole in the ground, old quarry or something like that, that became the waste disposal site. But it was never scientifically engineered. There were blind systems. Some of them were very close to water courses and streams and so forth. So we undertook quite a lengthy process. We have all of them regularized, and we've managed to clear the backlog last year, and we've provided some of the statistics there. In last year, we compiled a new survey to identify what new amount of landfill sites then were either illegal or needed to be licensed, and the amount of 57, that's a new lot that we're going to be dealing with this year and finalizing this year. This is well underway, and I think this is some old statistics we provided at the end of last year, and the actual licenses are issued by the provinces, and we play a supportive role in terms of coordinating this and reporting at the national level. Yeah, then to really close on the one of the hazardous materials that we thought would highlight, the minister is prioritized also this year, is asbestos. South Africa has a history of mining of asbestos that was used in construction and in all types of insulation, and in terms of our history, a lot of it in roofing and construction materials. But asbestos is absolutely, absolutely dangerous. Diseases, it's called asbestosis, and something that affects the lungs, it's called mesothelioma. A very, very debilitating disease that can result in death. And in South Africa, there's a lot of people in a lot of different places in parts of South Africa that do have this disease, and just go to the background in terms of how we're approaching dealing with asbestos remediation. So there's two aspects here, Chair Vakilo. One is the primary asbestos, which is the mining of asbestos, which really is the mandate of the Department of Mineral Resources. What we're dealing with is what is known as secondary asbestos, which are the effects of this asbestos that's still on railway tracks, some of them in communities, in schools, that the secondary aspects of asbestos, that the wind blows, the dust carries, and so forth. So the mining aspects is dealt with by DMR in terms of the closure of the mines, and asbestos was banned in South Africa in 1999, and we are then dealing with the secondary aspects of this. So in 2004, we undertook a study to assess the full extent of secondary asbestos contamination in South Africa. The study was completed in 2006, and it really looked at the four provinces that really had full effects and history of mining and transportation contamination, which is Northern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest. We've also recently also discovered in the subsequent studies some aspects of mining that took place in Northern KwaZulu-Natal as well. In 2006, we then developed a remediation plan and a costing model for these contaminated areas together with the social impact impact assessment study, which we then submitted to Cabinet, and Cabinet approved a remediation plan, and that plan that deals with an approach on the next slide, which was really costing something about 10 billion rand for the full remediation of that, but I'll deal with that in a moment. So the approach was, how would we deal with asbestos? Big issue, and the study basically suggested an approach. Which was one scenario, no action, and some of it in terms of the way you deal with it is that if you had dug up whole heaps and stuff of that, you'd actually make the matters worse in some areas. So it'd rather be capped, sealed, and so that's the type of approach. Permanent relocation of people that would be affected, and how, for instance, if there was a school there, you would actually relocate the pupils and relocate some of the communities, which are big matters and big actions and big implementation. It comes with some big funding as well. But then when you look at temporary relocation to how we will temporarily relocate the communities, rehabilitate the immediate areas, and with that we've discovered brand new technologies coming from different parts of the world in terms of first world technologies and how we would deal with asbestos in terms of what is known as in situ treatment of asbestos. So just to give us a share in the progress on the asbestos remediation, for the coming 3 years, we're looking at the following program, which amounts to a total of 1.8 billion. The full program is more than 10 billion. We don't have that kind of money, but there's a few projects that we're working with in terms of a public-private partnership model. There's other models we're working with our sister departments that's responsible and has mandate over this area in terms of that would be human settlements, transport and education and the DMR as well. So Limpopo is looking at those areas of roads, schools, offices that we thought were very, very crucial at this moment where people are working there and living there, and there we needed to tackle that straight away. In the Northern Cape, roads as well, that's full of asbestos that needs to be dealt with, and here we're working very closely with the Department of Transport and with the Department of Education as well. Just to conclude on some of the challenges, share very quickly deal with in the sector. Funding is an issue, the issue around norms and standards, I've spoken to understanding and capacity building. We over the years have developed a more comprehensive framework in terms of regulations and legislations, and we continue to do that in terms of building a sound regulatory framework for waste management. With that comes then a growing population, which means increased volumes of waste. The one statistic I looked at was in around 2050, there will be about 9 billion people living on this planet. About 6 billion of those people will be urban dwellers. People will be producing a lot of waste in terms of our lifestyle at that time. So waste will be increasing. The complexity of waste streams will also be increasing. Every year there's about 100 different new synthetic chemicals that are introduced in the world, and with that comes new complex waste streams. Data management is a big issue. Recycling infrastructure, you could really say that we've just started off a zero base in terms of putting in recycling infrastructure in South Africa, and we continue to improve on that. When we look at waste collections and disposal at the local government level, we're really still dealing with very, very outdated infrastructure, and a lot of the hazardous landfill sites in South Africa actually are privately owned. Government does not own and operate hazardous landfill sites. To own, operate, engineer, and manage those sites comes with hundreds and hundreds of millions of rands to do it properly. I've spoken about the underpricing of waste, and we're attacking it then through the industry waste management plans, the pricing strategy, and the waste bureau. Waste disposal is still the cheapest approach and the most common approach. So about 88% of South Africa's waste is disposed compared to other countries where a lot of that waste is actually recovered and recycled. In the European Union, Eastern Europe, a lot of that is recycled, recovered for waste and heat generation and energy generation. If we compare ourselves with our big cousins on some waste streams, for instance, and paper packaging, Brazil is ahead about 30% recycling. India is ahead also in terms of electronic waste. But in South Africa, if we have to disaggregate, on, for instance, on glass, we recycle about 70% of our glass. Paper, we up about 60% of paper we recycle. Aluminium cans, we recycle almost about 90% of aluminium beverage cans as well. So on different waste streams, we up, and on others, we're not. And we are addressing it in terms of what is known as waste diversion approach. So ultimately, we're looking at less and less waste going to landfill, less landfill sites in the country. We have been closing some down. Members would know that Minister Old announced last year in a budget speech we closed down a major problematic landfill site in the South Durban Basin, known as the Bulbul Drive Hazardous Landfill Site. Really, in terms of legacy as a country, this was a massive hazardous landfill site situated right inside the community, affecting many, many people, and we closed it down, and that's really improved issues in terms of the South Durban Basin already, in terms of leachate management and so forth. So we continuously do that in terms of how we do divert waste from landfill sites, pass it higher up in the waste stream, in terms of what we call waste valorization and the value chain, to recycle waste higher up in the value chain. The higher up in the value chain it's recycled, the more value the waste has. When the paper and the plastic lands in the landfill site and it's contaminated, it's dirty and messed up, value diminished substantially. So we're looking at waste recovery at source, waste separation at source, and Mr. in a budget speech announced already our commitment to doing this in terms of guidelines and regulations around those processes. Chairman, just to look at how we've done in terms of waste collection in South Africa over the years, in terms of local authorities' collection of waste, from our 1996 census to 2011, up from 52% to 62%. But our most recent statistic that we have announced with COPTA through Stats say is 74%. Am I right, Ms. Africa? 74% collection rate that we've achieved since 1996. So there is improvement constantly there. And then in terms of removal by local authorities and private companies, you would see percentages there. One glaring one is that on the right-hand side you would see that disposal and refuse dumps are decreasing, and on the left-hand side collections is increasing. That's basically the picture I wanted to summarize with that graph. Then before we move on to chemicals here, just to summarize and conclude the waste aspect and with the solutions that we envisage in terms of how we manage the different waste streams, with the economic reforms around the pricing strategy, with the institutional reform, with the Waste Management Bureau, and with the regulatory framework, we feel that we have a good package. Working with the private sector and industries together with the different tiers of government, we think we have a solid platform in terms of how we would move forward now in managing waste in South Africa more effectively. And combined with that, I think over the past year, for instance, we've been working in one local authority, which is the Mzunduzi Municipality. We spoke about many times in this portfolio committee. And if you go to Pietermaritzburg now, after the year, that city is much cleaner now than it was a year ago. And we have been working with a number of approaches to how we have the policy process there, and how we work with things like buyback centers, the recycling at the landfill sites, how we promote the recycling economy and the model for promoting the waste economy and bringing in waste pickers and the informal sector. And we're using that model to replicate to other metros and municipalities across the country as well. And there, we were supported to some extent by the German government with feasibility studies that were done over a period of time that really gave us a very good scientific approach and model how we will deal with waste at the local government level. So that model has been pioneered, and it's working well, and we would look at replicating that in other municipalities across the country. And there too we work very closely with COPTA, SELGA, LISA, and other institutions like the CSR that help us with data, scientific studies, and so forth. Just to conclude then, Chair, in March of this year, Minister convened the National Waste Management Summit. We saw over 500 people attending over 3 days from various parts of the community of South Africa, academia, industry, NGOs, communities, and the private sector. And there we adopted what is now known as White River Resolutions, a 12-point plan and resolution that guides how we would deal with waste management going forward. So, Chair, that's really the waste part. We just said that Obert Baloyi will take us to the chemical part, but EJ, I'm not sure if you want to pause here for a while or we'll stay on.
Then let's continue, finish the presentation, then we'll interrupt every part of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning again, Honorable members. Good morning, Minister and colleagues. Honorable Chair, I think we tried in the presentation to respond to the questions that you asked us last time. At the first part, from slide 31 to slide 41 basically lists the conventions that South Africa is party to and where we are with regards to implementation. And then from slide 42 basically to the end is the slide that we presented the last time. And I don't know if Jefferson would like me to continue with those because those we had already done that. So the purpose for today's best is to brief the Portfolio Committee on Environment about chemicals and waste NEA that South Africa is party to, and also multilateral environmental agreements. And then it's I apologize, honorable members. The second purpose is basically the one that we presented last time to request the Portfolio Committee on Environment to approve the ratification by South Africa of the Bay Amendment. We start with explaining what multilateral environmental agreements are, specifically the ones that are on chemicals and waste. Firstly, the United Nations Environment Programme has been focused on coordinating scientific research and collective action globally to mitigate the possible negative impacts of chemicals and waste. NEAs play a critical role in the overall framework of environmental laws and conventions. They complement and enhance national legislation, bilateral or regional agreements. And this can be the other way around as well. I mean, you can have the international agreements first and then reinforce by having national legislation. MEAs form the working international legal basis for global efforts to address possible harm to the environment and human health. And the reason is all global is because some of this pollution and chemicals they move across the borders. They don't live only in South Africa. They affect other countries as well South Africa is affected by other people's production and use of these chemicals. And since 1994, South Africa has become a party to various multilateral environmental agreements, and we will talk about those just now. The Department of Environmental Affairs is a focal point for the chemicals and waste multilateral environmental agreement. The first one to look at is the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants. I think the question that was asked even the last time when we were talking about the Basel was the naming of this convention. The naming of the convention has that entire part of where they were adopted. So this one was adopted in Stockholm. The primary objective of the Stockholm Convention is a global treaty to protect human health and environment from highly dangerous, long-lasting, long-range chemicals by restricting and ultimately eliminating their production, use, trade, release, and storage. And we'll talk about some of the way that we're doing in South Africa to comply with the Stockholm Convention. The convention bans immediately all production and use of some of the persistent organic pollutants and allows registration for exemptions, and we'll talk about that as well because we do have an exemption in South Africa from the Stockholm Convention on one of these chemicals. Persistent organic pollutants remain intact in the environment for long periods and gradually accumulate in the fatty tissue of living organisms and can cause cancer and birth defects. They may also disrupt immune and reproductive systems and even diminish intelligence. They are chemicals that can be found in pesticides, in paint additives, in heat exchange fluids, in transformers, sealants, and also in plastics. With regards to implementation of the convention, as I indicated, the Stockholm Convention bans the production of chemicals. And one of the chemicals, the GDG had already mentioned, is the polyfluorinated bioethanol. But it has given us time, time period for the phasing out of the production and the use of the polyfluorinated bioethanol. And the deadline for that is 2025. So as a country, we need to try to move towards the compliance of that. Now, the recovered polychlorinated bioethanol must then be treated and eliminated. So 2025 is for us to stop the production and the use, and then between 2025 and 2028 is the management of that, the elimination from the environment, like disposal or treating, to make sure that it does not get into the environment. In South Africa, currently, we're developing an inventory in order to plan for the phase out of polychlorinated bioethanol containing equipment. The minister promulgated regulations last year requiring all PCB holders to submit the polychlorinated bioethanol holders. I'll give just examples now. It's an oil. It's a chemical that's found in oil. You find those mainly in electricity generating and distribution. So you find those in transformers, you find them in switchgears. They use the oil. But that oil does have this chemical. And the production of the transformers that has this chemical stopped in 1989. But unfortunately, most of those transformers and the equipment that's produced continue to use this. So we still have in the country equipment that uses oil that has polychlorinated bioethanol. So by the 10th of July, we are expecting to get inventory and phase out plans from different companies. This will be from the mining, this will be in electric. Eskom actually has already done their phase out plan and has indicated on how they will. You find this as well in the automotive industry as well. What we are doing as a national department with regards to polychlorinated bioethanol, because municipalities also do generate and distribute electricity. What we have done, we are assisting municipalities to develop this inventory and the phase out plan so that they can be able to assist us as a country to be able to comply. Under the Stockholm Convention, we have also a national implementation plan, which basically shows us on how we will comply with the provisions of the convention. Now, in some of this, when these chemicals are listed, we have an option to ask for an exemption, where we know that we do not have the alternatives to be able to implement in the country. And in one of these examples is in vector control, in malaria. Internationally, there has not been a suitable alternative to be able to take out malaria effectively. In South Africa, we stopped using DDT in, 2002, and then malaria deaths basically went up, and then it was reintroduced back into the system by the Department of Health, and the malaria pandemic was then managed. So currently, we are continuing to use DDT to make sure specifically for vector control, and in South Africa specifically malaria, because internationally there is no alternatives, suitable alternatives to be able to deal with malaria. The second convention that I want to talk about is Rotterdam Convention. The DG indicated that when chemicals and waste are transported transboundary, we as a country must be informed about the shipments that will be coming. And the Rotterdam Convention is for that, specifically for bio-informed content. This convention does not ban any chemicals. All it requires is that if a exporting country is going to export a chemical to another nation, they must get approval from that nation. So in our case, we will indicate that we don't have any national laws that have banned the use of that chemical. So it is okay, they can be able to export that chemical into the country. That is basically the purpose of the Rotterdam Convention. The main purpose is to facilitate information exchange. Because if that chemical comes into the country, they also indicate the issues of toxicity, how dangerous that chemical is, and if we have the capacity to be able to deal with that. The Rotterdam Convention has a body that is called the Chemical Review Committee. this chemical review committee is the one that recommends on the chemicals that should be listed under the Rotterdam Convention, that should be subject to the prior informed consent that the Rotterdam Convention requires. How we are implementing that currently in South Africa? We developed in 2009 the National Action Plan to implement the Rotterdam Convention. And as I indicated, the Department of Environmental Affairs is a designated national authority that is responsible for the implementation. So all the applications for prior informed consent, they come through to the department. They are processed within the department. And we process those in consultation, for example, if the pesticide consults with the Department of Agriculture to ensure that that pesticide is still allowed in the country. And if it's an industrial chemical, the Department of Health, we consult with them to make sure that that chemical is okay to be imported into the country. We have a unit in the department that that processes this prior informed consent. So we have, currently we do have the capacity to be able to service the Rotterdam Convention. We work together with the International Trade Administration Commission because they're the ones that deal with import and export of goods in South Africa. And we'll talk about the other goods, Honorable Chairperson, a little bit later. And this is under, it used to be under GTR, now it's under economic development. So we, between International Trade Administration Commission and the Department of Environmental Affairs, we have a memorandum of understanding. So if there is a chemical that is listed in the regulations by us, ITEC, International Trade Administration Commission, cannot issue a permit until we have said it is okay. So they come out with us, and then we give them a recommendation that it is okay, they can be able to issue that permit. And that applies as well with which that we spoke about the last time with regards to transboundary movement. So that is how we are currently implementing the Rotterdam Convention. The next convention is the Vienna Convention for the Protection of the Ozone Layer. And that is also supported, they work together, these two, the Montreal Protocol on substances that deplete the ozone layer. The Vienna Convention came, it was more of a scientific a convention, and then they had to come up with a protocol that gives us the targets on taking out the different ozone depleting substances. Ozone depleting substances, honorable members, is chemicals that find in our air conditioning, in our cars, in our refrigeration. So those are the gases that are used. They, unfortunately, most of them have an impact on the ozone layer. And this Montreal Protocol was designed to be able to deal with those chemicals. The convention was agreed in 1989. And then immediately, you remember, previously we used to have chlorofluorocarbon in our refrigeration. That has already been banned. You recently now, you buy refrigerator, they indicate CFC-free, and many other aerosol sprays, for example, they will indicate CFC-free, because CFCs have been banned and phased out completely. With the phasing out of chlorofluorocarbons, we introduced, as an alternative, hydrochlorofluorocarbon, HCFC. It was a little bit friendlier to the ozone, but the impact was still there. So in the then there was other alternatives that were founded, and the protocol made a decision that we need to fast track now the phasing out of hydrochlorofluorocarbons. This is the HCFCs. Again, these are refrigerants. You find them in air conditioning, in refrigeration as well. So currently in South Africa, we have developed and we are implementing a HCFC phase out plan that will comply, or that will help us to comply with the protocol. The protocol target is to phase out hydrochlorofluorocarbon by 2040, but it has broken that target into different phases. For example, by the end of this year, 2015, we must have reduced our consumption measured by a consumption of 2009-2010 by 10%. So by the end of this year, we must have reduced our consumption of HCFC by 10%, and we are on track with regards to complying with that. The Montreal Protocol is one of the successful international agreements because it has a multilateral fund. So our contributions are made. The phase-out plans that specifically the developing countries develop, like us, South Africa, we submit it to the multilateral fund to indicate that this is the agreement that we have that we need to take up, and this is how it's going to, this is how much it is going to cost us, and the MLF assists with regard, and they work with the implementing agencies like you need, assist us with regard to taking out those equipment with funding. So that I'm saying, this specifically is one of the most successful convention because it has a funding arm that assists the developing countries to phase out these chemicals. The other chemical under here is the methyl bromide. Methyl bromide we are supposed to have phased out by the end of this year as well. The convention allows, just like the Stockholm, allows for exemption where not suitable alternatives are found in here. And in South Africa, we still don't have suitable alternatives for methyl bromide in structural fumigation. So methyl bromide is used for fumigation in agricultural places and as well in buildings. I think the coastal areas, there are termites, for example, that destroy wood. So they use methyl bromide to be able to kill, to control those termites. Unfortunately, in South Africa and many other countries as well, we do not have suitable alternative testing that can be able to assist us. So what we're doing, and we're doing this through the meeting of the countries this year, is to ask for a critical use nomination. It's like an exemption that will allow us to be able to use methyl bromide beyond the deadline of phasing out methyl bromide by 2015. So that is how far we are with regards to the implementation of the Vienna Convention and the Montreal Protocol. We do have a unit that specifically looks into the management of ozone depleting substances. Again, we work with ICAS to make sure that the permits that are listed, that are requiring importation or exportation of these chemicals, we have a look into them. How we have implementing as well, we have looked, it's a very small industry on ozone depleting substances. So we have allocated, together with ICAS, quotas to be able to allow us to be able to meet our targets of phasing out these chemicals. The next convention is the Minamata Convention on Mercury. The objective of this convention is to protect human health and the environment from anthropogenic emissions and releases of mercury and mercury compounds. It's something that as human beings we basically start. The effect of high levels of mercury in pregnant women negatively affects the fetal neurological, this is your nervous system, development, and it has been linked to lower fertility, brain and nerve damage. When this convention was signed, it was signed in Japan, and we were taken to Minamata. The reason it's called Minamata because there was a big outbreak of the disease because of mercury. When people obviously live on fish, they cook a lot of feed, and then it has impacted them. So we were taken on a site visit to be able to see the impact of mercury to the town of Minamata. So the text of the convention was finalized and agreed at the fifth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiation Committee. This was in Switzerland in 2013, and the convention was adopted and open for signature at the diplomatic conference for the Minamata Convention. This was in October 2013, and as South Africa, represented by the minister, we signed the convention. With regards to how we're going to implement convention, currently we are undertaking a strategy to determine. Oh, the signing of the convention does not necessarily mean that we are part. So we are not bound by the convention as yet. We will only be bound by the convention as soon as we have ratified. And for us to ratify, we are currently undertaking a study that will determine what will be the impact of ratifying the Minamata Convention, and then that will determine whether we ratify as a convention or not. So that is currently where we are with undertaking the study to be able to determine the impact. It will be the socio-economic impact of ratifying the convention going forward, and then obviously we'll then take it to through the cabinet and parliamentary process if ratification is the way to go. fifth one is what we started with at the previous meeting, the Bado Convention on the Transboundary Movement of Hazardous Waste and Other Waste. I'll try to be quick on this one because we have already presented.
No, I don't think that it will be fair to members because indeed they have, as a committee, we have recommendations to plan on this.
Okay, so this basically, the part that I was on was with regards to how we are on implementation of this convention.
Yeah.
You have another, the second part, Honorable Chair, which was with regards, and you are linked with the Basel Ban, because we're talking about the transboundary movement of waste, and at a previous meeting you raised the issue of goods, and I think you raised it now as we were introducing. We tried to get economic development to come with us because they are the ones that are managing the International Trade Administration Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an act that governs the import and export of goods into the country. Continuously, they come up with regulations. The latest regulations were published, was promulgated by Minister Patel in 2012. And the regulation basically prescribes that goods described in the regulation cannot be imported into the Republic of South Africa without basically import permit. And this also includes, I think you'll be different from us, with regards to second-hand and used goods. And that will cover whatever cars and in the regulation it says including waste and scrap. So if we are importing it into the country, we need to get a permit from International Trade Administration Commission. The only difficulty, Honorable Chair, because you are specifically with the cars that come in bound to go to our neighbors.
They come to us.
With that, there is no requirement for that because it is in transit. So ITEC does not issue permits for transit goods. They allow them to come. They told us that they have an implementation unit that makes sure that they enforce the permit first, and where goods are supposed to be in transit, they just go past. And they say they have the implementation units that make sure that if it's said it's in transit, it does not stay in South Africa. And there are penalties where you are found that you brought in something in the name of transit, but you never transited those goods to where you said you were going to take them initially. So they said, and they are enforcing those. And specifically, the problem is with regards to second-hand goods. Now, the ones that we're bringing into the country for use, the second-hand goods, the examples that you use on our old chairs with clothes, they allow those. They, in the permit that they issue to the importers, they stipulate conditions with regards to how those goods should be disposed of if they're not going to be used. So there is a possibility that you might get some of the OPR coming in and they might not ultimately be used. So it didn't come in as waste. It came in as a used good. It's not regarded as waste. But you find that it comes in and ultimately it's not going to be reused. So it ultimately ends up being a waste because nobody uses it. And I think in our last presentation we used the issue of electronic waste, as example, computers and cell phones, where donations on computers are given, and when they come into the country, you find that these computers, they came in as goods instead of waste, but when you try to work on those computers, they are not working. As I indicated, they say they have an implementation unit that makes sure that they enforce their regulations to make sure that they are in control of this used goods as they come into the country, and the management of those as they come into the country, and the ones as well that are supposed to be considered to be in transit to our neighboring countries as well, because they use our ports as a means of transportation. The regulation lists a lot of different goods that require this permit. I think I'll stop there.
Thank you, sir. Just add one thing. The principle is that these second-hand goods are not regarded as waste. So they're coming in as second-hand goods. The issue here says that we are not picking up the useless clothing as a major waste problem on the landfill site. So if you go back to and compare, sir, I just pulled out the statistics. Now, the Americans, they dump 10.5 million tons of waste clothing to landfill sites every year. We don't do that. We're not doing that. We don't find waste clothing on landfill sites. In Africa, this clothing is reused. It's recycled. It's made into all types of goods and stuff like that. So I think the issue of the illegal or this would call it an area that's not being managed properly with ITAP, because they're not seeing it as waste. It's seen as second-hand goods. So with that, Chair, we developed now the import and export regulations, which we will be finalizing this year. We have a draft we can share with you. We're working with ITAC and Economic Development on tightening that aspect of how to manage second-hand goods. Some are coming illegally, and that is why this is enforcement unit has been set up at ITAC. But others are coming in legally as second-hand goods, which are being reused and recycled as well.
Just
also to add, I would say the stuff that's in transit, if it's in transit, rather, that country in the neighborhood we have consented to receive it. So in terms of the convention, in respect of then the protection of the country in terms of the chemicals management, they is a mechanism for the country to be covered. But I think on the other things that are secondhand, like we ourselves, if they are goods and then they arrive and after a month they are waste, or when they came in and say as goods, then they some kind of a loophole, which I think maybe the minister would have to think about in terms of how to ever tighten the legislation. Mark was talking about the regulation that on imports that we are considering. I also just wanted to make one addition to the earlier presentation by Mark on the licensing project. One, he's clarified that there are different licensing authorities. The provinces are responsible for general waste, national is responsible for hazardous waste. But we've had to intervene and support provinces and the municipalities. So national appointed service providers will handhold municipalities to submit applications for provinces to give even an authorization for those landfill sites. And that project is what we've been going back and forth on, and this is also about managing the conflict, the possible conflict, because the province cannot appoint a consultant to do an environmental impact study and prepare reports when in actual fact they are also going to be the licensing authority. So national head tend to come in on that basis, just as a matter for clarification. Then secondly, the other aspect of the, you remember in that will, in that first part where we spoke about basic refuse removal services policy for indigents. This was, again, in acknowledging the fact that one, there are people, there are households that are unable to pay for services, and using the indigent policy that already exists in government. How, because waste is unlike water where you can close a tap and not allow water to run. Waste has to still be collected whether people are paying or not paying. and it is an environmental noise that that you do not want. So in those, in respect of that, there is a determined funding allocation that has been given to all municipalities based on a defined formula around the household size and so on, and what, how much it could be to contribute to waste collection. And now all municipalities are at least supposed to contribute something towards waste management. And at this point in time, in terms of our high-level monitoring and our engagement with DCOC or COPTA, it looks like the administrators that are just absorbing that allocation for other activities and not necessarily use it for waste management in particular. So, and the table, that graph that Mark had on waste service provision was also showing the level of service for each, because you have in a communal area, maybe you have a refuse dump, but in other areas you'd have what is called a private company that collects from time to time. So the level of service is also defined based on the logistics and also the costs that are involved in terms of how you access implement settlements where you also have huge developments of sheds and other kinds of settlements. So it is not just a weekly service. In some of those you have maybe a monthly service. So the level of service is defined also in terms of our current standards. As we discussed that with status, I think we've reached an agreement with Statistics of South Africa in terms of how they define waste collection in the national statistics. And I thought I should just make those last additions to the presentation.
I will say hold the horses so that we allow members to get variations on the issues in question, then you can come in with the also the answer in the questions. Bungane colleagues, it's now your time. Bungane you are? Oh, Edward. Honorable member Edward. Maluleke, Makubela, and Nyambi. That order.
Thank you very much, sir. And thanks to the department for the presentation that you've just given. Chair, I'm a bit concerned because previously you mentioned that you need to find out what the department will do, especially with the issue of disposable netties. Remember when we did this public consultation, on all this public consultation, there was not even a single consultation where we went to, it wasn't raised, the issue of disposable netties, as well as women sanitary, I don't want to mention the name, just mentioned. Yes, I was hoping that maybe we'll get the indication from the department. What are they doing to address it? I heard that they are working with COPTA to address the issue of waste management in the local municipality. But I was hoping that they will especially mention this because it was raised by the portfolio committee. And the other thing, Chair, although they are doing quite well, like they've mentioned in Umsoro's way, they are collecting waste and give money for areas. But I'm concerned there is not radical movement in ensuring that we use waste to energy. If there are countries like Sweden which are importing garbage in order to make energy, I think we need to be taking that good advice from them. Look at what they are doing instead of going ahead in approving the landfill site, taking the garbage to landfill site. Let's rather move to a radical situation where we use this garbage to generate energy, as we have a sort of a crisis in South Africa. Thank you, sir. I will stop there for now.
Which is what we're doing in Durban. Honourable Member Tim Kamp.
Thank you, sir. Okay, first of all, the first question is for clarity. the DG also explain now about the, you know, the whole thing of local level, provincial level, national level, about the waste. But like, if there's, so that means that we as national can still like take charge if something goes wrong and provincial does not, you know, like comply or whatever. So it doesn't mean that national don't have a say in local waste management at all. This is for clarity. And then I'll probably have to ask a written question about it, but I was curious as to know if we maybe have numbers or something on the specific impact on job creation. They say, we say, in a week's time, South Africa will not have one more plastic dropping bag. We will go and we'll let's say do paper and recycled materials or whatever, job creation like that. Would that ever be a possibility for South Africa, or is it too far-fetched and fluffy or whatever, you know? So, and then my last question is the PCBs. It says that we're waiting, or so you said we're waiting for the companies to say when their phase-out plans will start, etc. Do we have an indication yet as to when it will be phased out completely, or when we would want it to be phased out? Yeah, some more info.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get clarity in terms of emphasizing municipalities, the relationship of the department and municipalities. Asking because we have a challenge. Remember, Mauritania had one pencil site which was declared unlawful, and they are busy collecting waste. So I'm asking myself where are they dumping it now, because that landfill site is closed. So I want to check if you close the landfill site, do you mail fast track the other one so that the waste should not be kept everywhere. The other issue is on the law enforcement. As we were thinking about issues of laws and everything, there is this thing of when the, I don't know if the DCI or what, when they take this fake clothes and everything, this one goes and sell on the street, and they take it to the dumping site. I'm giving an example on the one in Pretoria, in Opatia Forum, but then people are taking those clothes and selling them outside. Even they eat these things of Avon, the lipsticks and everything. So I just want to check the management of the enforcement in the latter side. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, there were two presentations in one. Does it mean we've got more question time and clarity?
You see, there's time to ask requests.
We may need to prioritize, or firstly be on the first presentation and later on the other one. Firstly, just a comment to saying if prior to 2008 there was just no common vision in South Africa in terms of Waste Management Act, to where we are now, I think there's been a lot of movement. We must be able to commend the government for the kind of efforts or work that is being done in this country like that. But that should not mean that we should not still move with speed and close the gaps, the loopholes where they still exist and so on. We still need to move faster. But I'm just a bit impressed, Chair, that as we develop all these pieces of legislation and trying to get make sure that everybody, including the industry, participate and we all move in this direction, I think it's quite commendable. But of course, there are questions that one needs to ask. And given what the Chair said, first I need to look at my questions properly. The first will be with regards to goal 4. Some of these are not paid, but it's on the slide number 6, but the one that has got those goals, goal 4, which has to do with making the people aware and so on and so on, and when Mark elaborated on it, the referred to issues of education and so on, so just educating the public about what are the implications and all of that. Because I think that's where we should do more work. I don't think the general public is really aware. Some of us are beginning to get more informed as we participate in this particular portfolio committee. But I can tell you, even other members of parliament may have no much information as to what happens in the area of environment. There's still some confusion. Even when we debated during the budget vote, even other members would confuse whether we're in environment or dealing with water or dealing with other things. I'm getting this general confusion in terms of what happens. But I'm saying the department may need to do more to ensuring that the public understand issues of environment. Even the dangers that are there, down the slide you show the dangers of asbestos and so on and so forth, quite safe in terms of what is happening. But the public may not be aware. Some are aware that they get sick. But you don't need to wait until you get sick that you get to understand what are the dangers and so on and so on. I'm just saying that goal four to me becomes very much important, and we want to do more work on that. The second question is even related. You talk of challenges, and in those challenges, amongst others, it's a lack of funds to implement the necessary systems and infrastructure. It's a pity that we have to move from one slide to another, but you will know the slide I'm referring to. Yeah, from the challenge. Page 14, on the other, yeah, not the soft copy, the one that is presented, page 14. Yeah. We talk there, I think, on the lack of lack of adequate funds for implementing the national systems and infrastructure for recycling. It's a major issue. At the rate of pace on which we are moving with these kind of challenges, do you have any projection what it will mean? Maybe scary to know, but perhaps we need to be aware what will it take us to be able to deal with that. The last for now, Chair. You have shown two options, or rather two options of that's how you're managing it. The one on the extended producer responsibility scheme, there's one that is market driven or industry driven in terms of your wording there. The other being government driven. Currently, are we running them concurrently, or are you, let me put it differently, are you putting those options forward in terms of what we should do, should consider, so now they are not necessarily finalized? Oh, I see. Because perhaps it's the area we may need to move with speed. But you have gone at length in terms of saying that the role may need to be in place to be doing the following and so on and so on. Whether that has nothing to do with either option. So it will be there on board, yes. Perhaps then on that one I'm covered immediately. But looking at the promises, how they are performing. Basically, it's just the Health Care and Western Cape that the rest of the seven provinces, I'm not looking at the slide now, in terms of collectors, depots, and so on, there's no much being done there. In other yards on the tires, the collection, in some of them, you just have got nothing at all. I don't know whether they collect the housing. Or what does it mean that the entire province has got nothing at airport or what is that for the I think I'll to put it. When you look at that,
We see Northern KB, that has got two transporters, one, Deadbox, one. And so, but you said this is another flight that it also depends on the availability of you know. But I'm looking at the entire province, it can't just be that it's so minimal that you only need one transporter or something like that. Because in your other goal or other, it's not necessarily a goal, you had four sites which overlapped to each other. But two of them, you're talking about a job creation. And you're also talking about, other than job creation, you talked about empowerment of the previously disadvantaged and so on. Those two circles means that we can still do a lot when you look at this particular area. And we even went to an extent of showing the kind of jobs that will be created per month. 1,000, 3,000, and so on. And I think you were very conservative. If you look at the slides of promises, the kind of work that can still be done, and that, Minister, I think the projection in terms of the job that can be created, or if it's a current one, or what we can do potential. I think we can do far much better than that if you compare to what the provinces are doing. In terms of answering, I think you have reconciled the three slides I'm referring to. But I'm actually making a point to say we can do more in terms of empowering the previously disadvantaged and the job creation. And when you look at what is still lacking in the seven provinces, that are not done, will just come
back. Yeah, for now. For now, we are done.
Yes, more presentation in the key, please. Slide number 14. I mean page 14, slide 28. And everyone can breathe. Now I have breathe. See, he briefly in G. Say anything. He said, say, no, now he's the, let's say, no delay. Put your mom on, put in a message. Tell him.
Thank you so much. The question is based on page 14, slide number 28. Yeah.
Level of recycling.
Yeah. In the presentation, you alluded to the fact that the big countries are advanced in terms of the infrastructure that is used for recycling. Now the question is, much as you mentioned India and Brazil, in terms of the infrastructure. As a department, do you have any plans to copy from India and Brazil? And if there's a plan, how far can we go in order to copy the best examples from those countries?
The person is slide number 5 was talking about an agent to reduce the use and the recycle waste in our work for the environment. I just want to know how I'm going to achieve this at the house level for recycling products. Yes.
Okay. I think maybe just a comment. It might be helpful. There are some documents that he has referred to, like for instance the White River resources and the other important documents that I think the members of the committee can benefit from. That's one question, and it's political. If you are saying in South Africa, we don't allow, now I don't know how international law works. If you say in South Africa, we won't allow korokoros from Japan and anywhere else, to lend in our advances, we say that for a political reason, because we know what these goro-goros will cause to the well-being of our people. Now, but when it concerns our neighbors, we say yes, our ports can be used for our neighbors to suffer from the pollution that will be caused by these old and terrible cars, second and third hand, fourth hand from Japan, Korea, and everywhere else. And the EU, by the way, they also, I don't know whether they also bring cars as well, and routes. And we then facilitate to our ports. Are we not acting not in the interest of our political leaders as a country? Because if indeed people want to kill themselves, want to kill their nation through air pollution and greenhouse gas, the carbon dioxide, they can get other ports to do so. Why we allow? What is in there for us? Because it just goes against the grain of where we stand in South Africa on this matter. If we can allow it in our country, why do we facilitate for other countries to get this terrible house? Thank you.
Okay, thanks. So I'll join you. There's still a lot to be done in terms of precisely we have just started. We can see where we're going. We have just started also with the law. There's still a lot that needs to be done. But again, we are doing something. But on what we are doing, we need not the two scenarios that we have created tonight of your private land and the garden plan. With this too, when you introduce staff collecting, we did not undo the jobs that you have created. How will you protect those jobs when you come in as government? Of course, when we must come in, we must create the necessary infrastructure to get those money so that those money don't go to private individuals. As we do so, we must also ensure that we don't keep the capacity that we have created, the job creation capacity that we have created, and the industry.
That is, by the way, that we have created in the system. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chen. I can respond then to the Honorable Bugani. The issue of the disposable nappies and sanitary hygiene, Mamas Africa will respond to that. We've got an approach to dealing with that. Then to deal with the waste to energy. Waste to energy, again, Minister has prioritized us even through a budget speech. So I want to just quickly allude to some of the difficulties we have had. We can produce a lot of electricity from what is happening in South Africa already. So from natural gas, in fact, in Durban for many years, more than 15 years now, we produce about 8 megawatts of electricity from natural gas. But from actual waste, the paper and the packaging, organic waste, we can produce electricity through what is known as anaerobic digestion and pyrolysis. So in Mzuduzi, we've got a project around 10 megawatts. In Rustenburg, there's a project, but they are all in various stages of commissioning. We also got the projects where we produce electricity from cow dung, from bamboo, from sewage, biodigest waste, and all of that. And it's in a range of 3 megawatts, 10 megawatts, and that's about the most. The biggest problem we have is back to our electricity problem around what is known as a single buy model. So at the moment, nobody is allowed to buy electricity that's generated except Eskom. And the issue here is at the distribution level, that can we allow municipalities, for instance, to use that electricity for themselves? Now, it goes back to what is known as this megaflex rate. That means it's at 85 cents a kilowatt hour, and that's the most that municipalities are allowed to buy.
the price that that Eskom sells eventually to consumers, and that we paid around 1.20 or more per kilowatt hour. So for a person that's putting in a plant, sometimes the feasibility and the financial feasibility of actually putting in the plant based on your offtake agreements, what is known as a power purchase agreement, the PPA, sometimes it's not feasible to put in that kind of CapEx when you're not going to get the kind of electricity tariffs that sustains the plant over many years in order to pay back your loans and your debt finance and all of that. So we've been working with this. There's been submission made to the Minister of Energy where she has to make a special dispensation, and she's empowered to do that. And we've done that for other streams, so for co-generation, which this can fall into, and for biomass. She can stipulate a tariff and a period for which these things can be done. We did a pioneering one for COP17 where we built a solar plant, which is at the moment still producing electricity and supplying to Tekweni under special dispensation. And so that has to happen for it to really go forward. But companies at the moment, and many mining companies, can still generate for own use, and it's happening. So, honorable member, things have just started to get off the ground. After feasibility studies, people securing ways, looking at all the financing, getting financing through IDCs and other FDIs and all that, it's just taken off. And we have summarized that in a year's time, in South Africa, we were producing about 50 megawatts of electricity from waste. Now, 50 megawatts is enough to power like city of Cape Town. That's how much 50 megawatts is. Then, Honorable Edwards, in terms of the compliance with the local government, yes, we can take action. Now, our system of enforcement and the Green Scorpions and environmental management inspectors, those across local government, provincial government, and national government. So the question is, if the local government fails, for instance, in certain aspects of managing waste, can we intervene? Yes. And we've been doing that over the years in terms of our support, in terms of provision of guidelines, mechanisms, and so forth. But around non-compliance, they do have their own bylaws, ordinances as well. I think last time we spoke about burning of waste and so forth. The question around PCBs, Mr. Beloy will answer that, exactly when that will be phased out. Honorable Maluleka, the Mauritian example, so we've got quite a few of these examples that if we do not find an adequate site, or if we do not find a place where waste can be disposed, we're not going to close down that site. So we've had an example in Nelspruit, we've had one in Matuba now as well, where we work with the province and the local government to find the legal site. And I've been doing this before we can actually close down the site. I mean, it would not be prudent for us to do that. I mean, we create a bigger environmental problem, I would think, Chair. Moving on then, Honorable Maluleka, thanks for your compliments and your commendation. Marco Bale, sorry, almost the same. There's two letters that are interchanged. Marco Bale. I'll get it right next time. Honorable Makubela. So I think we agree with you, and the question is, you know, how much awareness is enough awareness? We will be doing awareness, you know, for a long time as we evolve, even with different aspects of waste. We will constantly be doing that. And we do that. We have a unit under Africa that really looks at awareness, capacity building, and adopting guidelines when it comes to World Environment Week, when it comes to the different environment days, like Ozone Day and things like that. We really got in a big way in terms of awareness. The issue here that it does become costly. So what we've been doing is actually catching it at a level where this can be firmly ingrained in society, and that is at the schools. So we have developed curriculum for teachers to teach environmental awareness, right from primary school to secondary. For the first year last year, we installed for the first time ever, an undergraduate degree on waste management offered through Northwest and KZN. This year, KZN will be the first university that's offering a degree on the engineering postgraduate degree on waste management. So we try to get this ingrained, but the aspect of, you know, the capacity building, we will hear you, and yes, we will speed that up in terms of more awareness, even at this level here. And specifically around the dangers, the health hazards. So we, even our chemicals, Baloy will tell you that we have various outreach programs on PCBs, on lead, on paraffin safety, on other chemicals, where we get engaged at a community level to teach people about the dangers of these chemicals. And then, Honorable Marabella, on the challenges, and we were quite explicit about this aspect, that around the lack of funding and the recycling infrastructure, this was actually one of the outcomes that we debated at the Waste Summit. And we let everybody speak and engage in all this. And the conclusion of a lot of it was that the lack of funding, and to contextualize this, it's at a level where DG was also saying that local government, municipalities do get money. Sometimes it's used for other priorities. If a road gets washed away, if there's a disaster management, if there's some major disaster, they will take that money and use it for something else. And it's not prioritized the way I think it should be prioritized. At the same time, DG also spoke about what would be an appropriate and the right tariff to set for collection of waste. So that's important also, because if you set a tariff like electricity, people say, oh no, we're paying too much, it's too expensive. Then if you go too less, then you're going to be undercovering. You're not going to have a cost-reflective tariff. So that is another story on, you know, on affordability and so forth. Then, Honorable Bacabella, those options, what we've put there is two options that we have to consider. And with the Honorable Chair as well, in your last comment there, is that we don't want to necessarily fix what is not broken. So the issue of, like, the recycling oil project, the Petco one, the recycling of aluminum cans, like your Stony can there, is going well. They are improving. There are aspects, you know, where, for instance, we have to introduce issues of transformation and disadvantaged groups, those things, which we will introduce over time. But we want to get the bigger things sorted out with the Bureau and the three big industry plans, which will be more the right-hand side model that we will adopt. The left-hand side has been happening already, and we will let that go concurrently for now until we reach a place where we can get them also. So we will not lose any jobs. We will maintain those jobs there. But so on the empowerment side, the introducing disadvantaged, the previously disadvantaged, and all of that, we're going to get more and more into the waste streams. And to some aspect, we have to force that. We will have to bring that. So I think with the last comment there on the table, and this is after just over 1 year of implementation of the RESA program on the tires, that speaking up, and obviously they focus on where most of the cars are, and most of the fitment centers are, which is in the big urban areas like Kotain, Western Cape, KZN, and so forth. But we hear you. And we know that they are reaching out into these other areas, and we've also given some directives to RESA now that they need to move into some of the rural areas to create jobs there too. And then to Honorable Kekana on the slide 28, what's happening in India and Brazil and China. So for instance, our tire plan is actually modeled around what's happening in Brazil. And in terms of what's happening also in the way they transform the slums. What's the name of the slums again? Favelas, yeah. We visited them and looked at their tire programs as well, and we modeled some of it around what we want to do here. And it's the same concept we want to use in terms of getting more jobs in those types of communities. The lessons we're learning from India, for instance, around electronic waste, is that they do it, but very unsafe conditions. Dangerous chemicals, the kids are working with, you know, working on the computers and hazardous gases and so forth. So we visited them and seen what's happening there, but we want to improve on it in terms of how we're moving with our plans. So I think just the last one, Honourable Macrobella, also on the projections, you know, you might say that yes, they are they conservative in terms of the projections. I just kind of extrapolated them per year. We're looking at 36,000, 10,000, and so forth. If I compare them to what we've achieved already on the Rediza plan, for instance, the Rediza one, we had in the first year was over 1,000 farmer jobs, but on a 5-year, on a 3-year plan is 10,000 jobs. So I think what can happen is that we're starting off and we will upscale. We will radicalize and we will, you know, improve in terms of the numbers. But on the payment packaging, it's 12,000 per annum. E-waste is 36,000 jobs per annum. And I can assure you these are much more than some other sectors, industry sectors. But I hear you in terms of, you know, our aspirations and possibly being conservative, but we also want to be very realistic in terms of what can be achieved. This, you can say, can be achieved. You know, we'll give you some big numbers and then 3 years later you're going to ask how there's a job. But this we can deliver on Honorable Makugera. I think lastly, Chair, then in terms of the scrap cars and so forth, I'm wondering if TG or Mr. Beloy want to touch it. I think we have to some aspect or minister on the political issues there. So it's just we've done is just a motion.
Thank you, Deji. Thank you, honourable members. Indeed, I agree with you. The NEPI, disposal NEPIs and the sanitary towels are a big problem. Last year, as a department, in trying to, as part of what we're implementing the Northern Standards that the DG referred to, we visited some of our municipalities, and specifically we targeted the rural municipalities. And indeed, we found that disposable nets were one of our bigger challenges. So in response to that, what we are busy now doing through the provincial wage forums is that we are busy engaging the municipalities in making sure that first they understand what the service levels are. Because what we noted as well as part of those visits, because we visited the municipality as well as the communities around to engage both and try to understand. What we understood from municipalities mostly was that their perception of what the wage basic service is was that they have to read every week. And therefore, when they feel it's every week, I have to go there, I can't, maybe I shouldn't even bother. It's too much, it's too far, all those. So what we are busy doing now is to make them understand that there are options that can be used, but in a way that communities still get a service. And we are busy engaging them on establishing central election points as well. There are different methods that can be employed in different scenarios. So we are busy engaging with them. We attend all the provincial week forums. We have heads from different provinces that we attend and make sure that they understand. Because what we found was that they get overwhelmed and suddenly they give, we don't know how to do it, we just rather ignore it. But now that we're engaging them to say, we can establish central collection points in areas that you can't collect weekly, so that at least we manage them. Because we found disposal of messes in rivers. For those who are next to shopping centers, they make a trip to the next shopping center and husband, so it is really not acceptable. So we have actually, the issue with NEPIs is two-dimensional. The first one, the collection, especially from rural areas, which we are now addressing with municipalities, we're engaging them in the transfer solution. The second one is the nature of disposable NEPIs. It has a lot of plastics or even chemicals that absorb a lot of briquette. So that becomes a problem in landfill sites. While we may win vessel of collection, we have a problem of where do we take them, because necessarily they give problems at landfill site of instability, they don't compact and all sorts of things. On that front, we are busy with a study that we are trying to investigate what to do, what are the options that we can look into. And we are busy now, we are supposed to have a meeting actually today with industry, because we want to engage them, the manufacturer as well, of this message to say what are the environmentally acceptable options can we follow. Unfortunately, we did not get a lot of people who confirmed the tender, especially from the manufacturers. So we have postponed that meeting, but we are ready with the document of the research that we've done, and we want to engage with them in terms of going forward, how do we manufacture better products that can be easily managed for biodegradable. Something to that effect. So indeed, we are still following up with them. As soon as we have what we feel is sufficient confirmation of the manufacturer specifically, then we engage in them on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. There seems to be the requirement of the SOCOM is 2025, and the regulation that indicated to that Minister promulgated last requires that all the PCB holders that they submit the phase-out plan, they must indicate how by 2023, target is for 2023, so the phase-out plan will be able to tell us in between now and 2023, the different companies, how would they be able to phase out. Thank you.
Can I just quickly on the question from Honorable Nyambi, I think it needs to be responded to on the need to reduce, reuse, recycle, and what the role is for households. I think that's what I answered as the question. Again, this is an area where I think there's more work for the sector and the department around creating the awareness in respect of separation at source, basically, because households can contribute to us reducing the amount of waste that goes to landfill. If people actually separate and put plastics together, bottles and whatever, all the recyclables so that they can get to the recycling centers. And whilst we are also acknowledging that we still have the challenge in respect of facilities that are available nearer the some of the farmland communities. And then the last, the other comment that was made, I think both the chair and Honorable Makubela on the issue of existing industrialists or even enterprises versus the future in respect of government involvement in respect of the space on dealing with industrial waste management. I think that the law, the way the law works, it is not possible that you would make these people completely worse off. The mechanisms, the existing existing enterprises would continue. They would even have an advantage over the others because already you have that waste plan, it's properly costed, so the waste bureau would be able to look at that and provide for financing and continue to the fiscal in respect of the money that we receive from France. That's how we understood this the process from the discussions that we had with Treasure. So the funding streams would flow to then still support those initiatives and make sure that there is continuation, or there could be another arrangement, but that's how it is envisaged, and we'll see how it will work going forward. Lastly, on that principle around movement of goods, I think the problem is also two-pronged. For instance, we banned asbestos in the country, but in the neighborhood in Zimbabwe, they still produce asbestos products, and those products come from South Africa, South African ports to the other destinations. So they are more related to international, how the international relations would be managed. I think there might have to be another discussion, and maybe the minister would be guidance in terms of how the policy should anticipate the impact of this movement of goods between the countries and within the region. And for goods, the law is not administered by the department. Unfortunately, it's EDD as all it was written from it. For waste particularly, even if it's for products that move from through South Africa to another country, there is still that certification process in terms of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me start with that just adding to that issue, the last one you raised. You talked about the movement of goods. I think what has not been said so far, in addition to what the response was given, and even the presentation earlier on, is that these are not necessarily the only good tools that are available in terms of allowing movement of goods that are banned or that are waste and so forth in South Africa. The other instrument that we use is the whole tariff of the country tariff table that are actually managed and controlled by DPT, the Board of Trade and Tariffs. And those who would look at the new and obviously used goods, how the taxes and tariffs are added in terms of disallowing or allowing certain products into the country. So ad valorem taxes and so forth. So that's another instrument that is with DTI, which we also need to keep in mind. I said earlier on in one of our meetings, reminded colleagues about my own experience when I was at a course in some country in the U.S. when I was given lots of computers to bring to South Africa that would be used in schools. We could get them into the country. Much as I pleaded at the time, South Africa said no. And I didn't understand the time because I really wasn't exposed to this. You can't bring used computers in South Africa. I also mentioned the late Mama Ruth's example of bringing the old used trucks into four of them into South Africa. They had to be returned because there wasn't, South Africa wouldn't allow that. So there are various other instruments that have been used to check on those issues. In the list of the four skills on the iCheck method that are alluded to in the regulations that were promulgated by Minister Patel, you also inherently have in those goods, some of those goods, there would be some of the chemicals that are bent. And naturally, if a chemical is found in a waste or a used product like the computer, for instance, which is in the form of a mercury, that would apply, obviously, in terms of being prohibited, even if it doesn't say in a made computer. That computer does have that product. So that's the aspect that would be used. This matter of movement of allowing goods through our country, it is very difficult. It is a very, very pertinent issue. It is, however, extremely difficult. In that, it also has to do, Chair, with elements of sovereignty of nations. Do we say to Zimbabwe, we have banned this, we move towards banning this, except to be at a Basel-Rotterdam convention where we discuss this thing, and does Zimbabwe become part of the discussions and part of those parties that are bound? We can only advise and we can only guide. And I think it's important as colleagues to know that we have been given a task by Cabinet of Structure to begin discussions and analyzing the continental conflict, especially on the issues of waste, as well as waste management, in terms of helping one another to be capacitated in dealing with these matters. Because I did say that about 3 years ago in this portfolio, we were asked to authorize some toxic waste that were coming from, was it Nigeria or DRC? I can't remember. Nigeria. Nigeria that has to be, something different, treated and destroyed in South Africa. It's in a way business related, but because we have relatively better capacity, we then accepted that and actually relatively better capacity. So Cabinet is saying capacitate others. So that part of the work that we obviously have to do is talking just about these people. I was saying some of our colleagues will still say we are because we are detained. When we quite don't quite know because of this capacity issue. And that is when we're dealing with the Basel Convention issue. So it's a process that we are beginning to deal with. Should we say not on our airports? I'm not sure. It really is something that I think we should rather deal with differently, even before we say not on our offer. If people continue to insist that they are not going that direction, I think only then do we say that, and could we say that, because it has to do with the issue of relations as well. But I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't go that direction, but it is going there in different ways, because it has to happen. It shouldn't be that all of us just sit back when others are just dying in neighborhoods and other receiving many of these waste products, and we are all quiet. Second matter that I thought that it's important to deal with which is, I think, also a little bit political, is how the Department of Environmental Affairs at national level relates to other spheres of government in relation to whether we can say, hey, my sister, my brother in the municipality, you are not doing 1, 2, 3, come here. We think that you are not on the line, and therefore this is what you do. And maybe take over their function or dance, something like that. It is not allowed in terms of the constitution of the Republic of South Africa. We are spheres of government that has got responsibilities. We do have, in terms of Section 158, that we should capacitate municipalities, work with them, for them to be able to do their job and the provinces. We do have Section 100 and 139, under which you can actually take over some of the functions. So if you take over a function, you can only be under 139, which also has to be authorized by NCOP as well, and Parliament as well. I mean, just if it's a provincial government comes to NCOP, and then that's got to be authorized by Parliament. You can't just arrive and say, I'm moving in. That's one of the democratic checks and balances that we put in our own system of governance, and therefore I think much as difficult as it is at times, but it's really much more, I think, the emphasis put on support, determined standards, and these are the standards that we're going to set our role to set standards, and these are the standards that within which all of us are supposed to be. And it's not only about the municipality finding these standards, it's about the matter that you spoke earlier on, which we didn't quite conclude, on setting standards on this primary asbestos issue. Because if that department of GMR has to close the mine, they can't just sweep and say we have removed and we have closed the mine. The standard setting off from environmental point of view is done by this department of environmental affairs, including such groups. So we set standards and then they do the work. Even in terms of complying with those standards, we can come in and work with them. I just thought that colleagues, we should also may just remember, as Makubela has indicated, that we come a whole long way. Early on, right at the beginning of this discussion, the DDG indicated a matter related to a corner process. I think we do recall that process. It was HHS. It was a beginning of the setting of environmental laws and policies in South Africa. I think we've moved a great deal in this direction, that we now have lots of regulations. We have to implement them. Some of the things are related to how we move on to work with our society and our community to make things happen. This matter of producer responsibility, it's been discussed, by the way, all over, even at this World Economic Forum, we are going, many of the companies that began doing producer responsibility, collect goods that are used back to their stores and so forth and recycle and work on them. So I think those initiatives must be welcomed. However, in dealing with this matter, and I just want to illustrate how we will ensure that there is no reduction on employment, even as we have these market related tools that other people are using. That's the illustration that I'm from. I receive 2 cents on the wage hire, which before we implemented this wage hire plan. The 1 cent says, illustrates that we will create more than, I think it was about 15,000 or so jobs. The 1 cent says about 500 jobs. Now we looked at this thing. In the industry at the time, you had far more than 500 jobs already. Meaning that we actually understood that this plan is saying it's going to unemploy other people who have already been unemployed. So we wouldn't let that happen. And obviously, the submissions of waste fire, because as we go, you know, waste industry is clear, we will take that route on an ongoing basis, like for instance, we're moving into electronics, into lighting, into whatever. So it means that people have got to submit their intentions and their plan and illustrate how many jobs they are going to be creating and so forth. And that's the areas where we are going to be looking at this with a microscope and real seriousness of ensuring that the Honourable Party will really transition into radicalism that you're talking about, including in the space of, because the plants can't just end up in collections and households, it's the recycling. It must end up at even how do you reuse. We have four R's in our policy. So the fourth R must not die, and it will never be allowed to die. However, linked to this issue, what we shouldn't also forget is that there are many pilots in South Africa. We have too many irons on the stove, and all of the irons must one day realize to be one, this bigger one iron. And the pilots I'm saying, where you find waste programs being used in Ushunduzi, in other parts of KZN, from Haudang and so forth, different technologies are being used. So this issue of technology we must also never ever underestimate as an issue. Do we have our own technologies in South Africa? Technologies, different projects use different technologies, but the best one will emerge, because our own CSIR and our own institutions, Science and Technology Department, are continuing to do research on finding better solutions that can move us into those countries. If we, for instance, have KZN, SSD municipality power generation from, it pumps into the grid. We ourselves in our own building, we pump into the grid. This issue of the ICP, it goes along with our structure, and I'm sure we should not forget that we have East Mobile. That is to actually to say how much of industry role playing do you bring into the industry related to what ESCOM should be allowed to generate. It's a political issue, it's a highly sensitive issue, it is being processed, maybe we should be impatient because it could be so wrong one day if we hurry up very fast or hurry up slowly on this matter. It is a necessary thing because if we don't think thoroughly about it, we may find ourselves being way under power. I was once asked when I was Minister of Water, participating in the World Economic Forum on a panel like we'll be doing here, that please share with us, South Africa, how you are dealing with your tariff process on water production for your own Asian people. Because we in the state, especially because the state of California may have participated in the state, we have actually left this thing to the market. We have never quite created a balance of this thing. Left the market to an extent that it's just under the price of water in that country today. So the kind of balancing that we've got to do is extremely important. And I know, I'm aware that people are thinking very thoroughly about what percentage of ITPs should be green. We do have ITPs, by the way. They are already connecting to the green and so on. But it's just a question of now just determining the percentages of how far you can go so that this issue is actually just in a manner which will have cash flow for us. We are very serious about the thing of going for Department of Public Works Awareness and Education. And maybe it's something that you didn't say, I'm just adding to that about education and awareness. There is a program that's called Fundisa. Fundisa for Change in our department. It's even printed books, literature for educators, whatever. We also run awards, the best cleanest municipality. We haven't dealt with the dirtiest municipality. And award, I think we can imagine what it is. It should be called an award, but it's name and shame. Yes, but we do. We do have this cleanest municipality. That thing was run by Calabria. I think that's Calabria. Yeah, several years they've been holding the title. Even Cape, the PPE used to win every year. Something has happened there, we don't know why. So you see, even this education, it's not just about education. Something just goes wrong. So we shouldn't say it's always education. How does an municipality move from this level to this level? It can't be that now all of a sudden you have new people who have moved into that municipality. We don't know, but something must be done. So I really think that maybe we should be also be exemplary and be in those dungeons and go select as a committee rep, select municipalities and just go and elaborate and demonstrate what it is really key to be sure the part of education that I think we should conduct over and above which we do believe this is a grey area, very, very new and clean area where we can actually still create industrialism from the toxic waste, from ethanol production, in a manner that will help us to move forward. As we are right now, we cannot say we are satisfied with where we are, but we think that the hope is huge for us to really do a lot around Jesus. And I think in the interest of time, let me stop there. Maybe I should just touch on one thing. The fact that we have tires on in some provinces, not, I think the question has been alluded to. But remember, this is one problem that has been practically, in terms of implementation, has been on for about 1.5 years. So it is growing. I'm aware that the people in Zanzibar have actually gone to Northern Cape, to Northwest. They are trying to improve the participation in those provinces, in Bobo and so forth, even though there aren't many tires there, but people can connect, I'm sure there are. Some of us use the tires as lighting conductors. I was also to some colleagues who are saying, no, I even look at the way I'm sensitized about the need for the tire to be recycled. I look at tires on people's roofs, and I think I should go with them. You're so wrong, because they're using that for something else. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Colleagues, if there are any follow-ups or questions, that's like from the very bottom. If there are other questions, any other colleagues have some follow-up points?
No.
No,
Chair, if I don't make a follow-up, it will be like I was just threatening to knock. When I looked at the situation in terms of tire recycling and so on, I thought there's a lot of potential to have some asleep parliament. just to set up something and get into the private sector. To some degree you responded to the question on that the skill pool. But perhaps I should do it. It may be that I was very simply skip on it. Because if you say something is a criminal, it's a crime, and somewhat this person is trafficking drugs, and you get them in your airport, you arrest them, even if they are leaving, they are just en route or transit to another country. You don't say, no, you are passing OR, you are not coming to South Africa, therefore not arresting. You still arrested. Now, if South Africa bans a particular chemical, and that chemical comes to South Africa or via South Africa to another country, neighboring country, so, and we say, but our proceeds are not here, they can as well proceed for fear that there will be diplomatic challenges in that area. It's like that we should not be saying they should use our thoughts or whatever. These chemicals are banned by our country. So the mere sight or when we come across them, should be a problem. You know, like I'm saying, once you say in our country something, a drug, it's wrong. Whether you're killing that or another area, we know people who have been arrested all over. Because either they went elsewhere in terms of drug trafficking and so on, it's not allowed. But in these particular chemicals and goods, sort of relax or bend the laws. And I understand the difficulty that may be there. But the work, as you said, Minister, the work will be to ensure that perhaps we mobilize or canvass our understanding in the entire region, so that if we say no, all of us say no. And we don't have South Africa saying no, another country saying no, and so on, and there'll be confusion. Because then, legally, it's a particular problem. And you can't also want to monopolize the ports to be your own. when there's a particular inland country that may want to utilize the same port, and they are only seeing it because you are closest to that port yourself, and so on, and sort of bend it. They can use the port other than planes or other things that those which would come directly to your own country or land. So I'm just saying it's a bit difficult, but we need to work on it by way of it's a suggestion. It will no longer be a question anymore, Chair. I'm just saying it's a follow-up impact to even what you raised, although it was specifically in terms of cars and so on. But I'm saying we ban chemicals. We allow those chemicals en route to other countries. It can be the case. We should be able to say we can't allow. I know we arrested some people as government in South Africa who were transporting tobacco from Mozambique, whether it was from Mozambique to our own area and so on. We did that. I'm not sure that was proceeding to other countries, like to Switzerland or other countries. I'm just saying, what we learn something, it should be that we are consistent, that we can't allow that to even proceed from our own house. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. It was interesting to know that within the department there is a special remediation project. And I heard that the DDG mentioned that part of the KZN, they are also looking to address the issues of asbestos there. But I would like to mention a particular township, Madadeni and Osizweni. I think Honorable Shalem, if he's here, would attest to that the houses there, they still have the roof of asbestos. And I was hoping maybe this in this project, they will also be incorporated in this project so that we remove the asbestos that has filled. I thought maybe initially it was the human humanitarian responsibility. But now when I see that it's also part of our project in the department, I will plead for the department to look into the issue of Madadeni as well as issues with the townships. Thank you, sir.
Maybe put differently, how do we coordinate with human cement in these areas of houses? The last one from our side, the first information that has just landed on my table, that says, in fact, some South Africans buy these used cars through friends in our neighboring countries, then bring them to our country with registrations of our neighboring countries. Then after 2 years, we are then able to register them in our country. Now, it's something that, but to me, the fundamental issue, we are right, Comrade Minister, that indeed, why we are not allowing these cars in our country is because of a particular problem. And in my view, that is the problem that we need to discuss with our neighboring countries. But this is the dilemma that we find ourselves in. And again, if we are to continue against our will to allow these cars to come through our ports, instead we will not live peacefully because we know we're doing damage to you. We must respond to these countries. We must say that we know the damage that we're doing to you. We know that in fact, we are ourselves are trying even to remove this car from our streets, from our roads, so this BRT and whatever. And we are removing new ones, by the way, not second hand ones. But precisely because of their emissions and the collective emissions that come from our cars, this is the best that we are doing as a country. But for us, at the same time, to be allowing, and it has been proven by science that the older a car becomes, I can see mine, I've used so many old cars in my life. I think also the minister has used so many old cars. You see with the exhaust what comes out there. That we are seeing we are in serious problems. When you have thousands and thousands smoking cars going to another country, how would we see them? But of course, we should also be sensitive that we are dealing with the sovereign countries. We must take seriously, but we must try to influence them as well. Thank you.
In Tanzania. It's a weird example, or the most weird actually example. It is very criminal to be gay and lesbian in Uganda. If Uganda had a transit, South African transit through Uganda, it's banned there, it's not banned here. That's not criminal. I'm talking about the most weird example. Would they arrest that person there? It's okay, we say South Africa is fine. Wouldn't they? I'm saying those are the kinds of things that we really have to think about. Because if we begin at international level, discussions of this nature requires us to think thoroughly about certain possibilities of things today and tomorrow. We do have capital punishment in South Africa. No, we don't have it. Botswana doesn't have it. Our extradition laws are different from Botswana. Those are the kinds of permutations that we have to look into when we do this matter. It doesn't, however, never ever have to allow any situation where we get flooded with this group. That's why we have so many regulations. Ad valorem taxes, tariffs, the protection elements that are in our favor. But if a thing passes through an airport, it's in transit, it's not coming into South Africa. The matter that she speaks about is very, very serious. That was. Someone must never ever even be allowed to come in because it's got to go. If it's still coming in, it's actually illegal. Because it does never ever have to happen that way. That one is a clear even matter. This one of transit, it's not yours. It's going to a country. It's passing, it's never going to be over here. It's packaging whatever they take it to be, wherever they want to take it. All we're saying is that we are concerned that maybe they are not aware of the consequences of this problem. And therefore, let's take them along on the consequences of this problem. As best of those houses, we actually had a re-look at them. And on the sheets, the corrugated sheets, when South Africa banned the use of asbestos, we then secondary, primary, and some of the secondary, not all. Because if it's been treated like it's in a corrugated iron, it's not quite, it is filled, it's not like the patch that hangs out that affects people. So if it is filled and it's on a corrugated iron, and it stays like that, what becomes a problem, and this is where the ban then goes to housing issues, is what it says, if you are to remove and place that, you shouldn't do that without permission from the department, and you've got to talk to those who are relevant, so that when you remove, we actually also look at how the removal is happening, where the disposal is going to happen, and so forth and so forth. So as long as it's like that, so we want it right now, because where the old schools in Buwe, Tuwe, in Northern Cape, those schools are, the floors have been worn out, and the threads are beginning to head out. So that's what worries. when it was sealed, it wasn't really quite a problem. And there, there is a mechanism chair to work with. There's an IMC, a ministerial committee related to this matter. We, human settlements, and our co-chairing that, and ourselves. But we have just said to Charlie in this afternoon, Friday. Charlie came to report and they said, we have removed some of the asbestos roofing somewhere. And Catherine gave us what is this that we give people when they get compliance notice. Non-compliance notice that we have removed those things without having told. They weren't aware of this standing order we were saying. So we are now working with them about disposal of those things, how they should be treated and disposed of. So anywhere else, colleagues, let's let people know that whenever they remove anything of that nature, it has to be reported, it has to be handled in a manner that's efficient. I think that is good. These gardens are not supposed to be disposed.
Is there anything that you wanted to add, colleagues and friends from the other side? That is the minister. I think the minister has covered both the issues that you raised. I think from our side, you know, that the reason why we engaged on a program by program is so that we are able to go into the issues. Now we know what we are doing in relation to landfills. We know the challenges that are there. We know what we're doing in relation to recycling. And again, what is the preparatory work we have done so that we price all our waste streams. And of course, you can't recycle unless you put a price on any waste stream. So we believe that we are on the right track. With time, we should be able to benefit from all these initiatives that we have undertaken now. And from our side, as members, again, Minister, through you, let's thank the department. For again, you know, one thing good with this department, let me just say, every time you come to us, you come with the minister. Every time. And when the minister doesn't come, at least share the decency he didn't call me. As a chair, yo, give more some place, I don't know how it is, it's not any president. But I think that's a good relationship that we have with the minister and especially with the department as well. So that even if we raise some matters that are of a political nature, like they have raised them now, indeed they find them correct expression in cabinet. Because we know that the issue of cars, by the way, you have nothing to do with that. We have nothing to do with those issues. So they belong somewhere where you say it. Again, we would like to thank you very much. And we will continue then to also engage with other chapters that we have not engaged with as eloquently as we have with oceans and coasts and working for programs and now the program on chemical waste and other waste. Again, very, very thankful. Of course, as you know, DG, we will also be bringing in our entities just to get what it is that they promised to do last year and where are they. In what they promised as we conclude your reporting of last year, so that at least as we start this year, we start on this oversight work on the current year, quarter by quarter, we are able to check how far you have gone in the last quarter. But again, rest assured, we have no arms with the department being prepared when they come to us. You give us all the necessary documents and we even read them before we even come because we also get them from our innate facilities. Having said all that, we are saying this to all of you colleagues so that you keep on doing this wonderful work. By the way, our government is not a government without you. That's why we call ourselves that we are in government, because you are there representing us in government. and we are so proud of the work that you do, particularly in the environmental arena. With those words, we would like to thank you and thank you. Okay. By the way, when we started, I should have indicated that the secretary of the committee, Shireka, Ms. Madubesa, is not well. But of course, it's something that I think will be over with very soon. It's just a serious flu. When she spoke to me, I couldn't even hear her voice. But I think she should be okay. She has consulted the doctor. We have a lady from the committee section who's holding the fort for her. Now, we didn't give you the opportunity to say who you are. Now, you have the opportunity now so that we hear your voice.
Okay, my name is Kesha. I'm in committee section.
Okay. Colleagues, until we meet again, I hope there is food. Oh,
before you say the last word, you have to say the last word. We have brought this document called Chemicals and Waste Multilateral Alarm and Agreements, MEAs, Made Easy. We have now to write group around Environment Made Easy. So this is one of the first beginning of Make Easy, analyze the MEAs on the air. DG didn't do the foreword here. It's a foreword of one official. Don't look at it. Just look at the content and do the right thing next time. Secondly, and last from us, I think we owe each other some cake or tea or something. Because when there's change in a family, we've got to really have a celebration of a change. I will be informed on that somebody has got to join the elderly like us.
Oh, yeah.
So we wonder when it takes time. Thank you.
Now we will still have the whole year with ourselves and her. So maybe it will be good, in fact, to even invite the other party when we have the cake. We have the food then. Again, colleagues, we, as we always do, we have food ready. And thank you very much, by the way, for the good work that you have. Thank you very much.
I don't know what shirt I'm using on this.
Sean has the issue. Yeah.